All right, I'm Dave Rubin. This is the Rubin Report, and it's time for another Friday roundtable extravaganza. And we have not had more than two guests in a long, long time. We are going to push the limits of the internet today. We've got the hosts of Crane & Company on the Daily Wire, Jake Crane, Blaine Crane, and David Cohn. Jake, Blaine, David, welcome to the Rubin Report.
Thanks for having us, man. There hadn't been this many guys around the round table since King Arthur was sitting at it.
Exactly. I'm going to start, most importantly, with the guy not named Crane, David Cohn. I just want to say, big fan of yours from the Royals, Yankees, Mets. Yeah. I'm sure you've never heard that joke before. And do you have a stock line for that one?
Oh, yeah, of course. I say I would never pitch for the Mets. Are you kidding me? Or really the Yankees, for that matter. But David Cohn did send me a Twitter message last year, right, guys? You guys can verify
that. That's true.
And he said, keep up the great work, brother from another mother. So David Cohn does know I exist, and that made me feel good inside.
If y'all met, like, it could create, like a time warp.
Oh, the space-time continuum.
It's one of those inceptions. You're going to have to start spinning
the dreidel and see if they hit the ground.
Yeah, I've seen that one. Yeah.
I love Dave. You know, I'm a lifelong Yankees fan, so I loved Cohn from back in those years. Although, you know, he was on those early Mets teams, and they were a pretty funky crew. They were putting some stuff up their noses, and I think some weird stuff was going on in the dugout. Do you hear those stories?
It's funny. I mean, you go back even further. They were just eating hot dogs, drinking beers, and playing baseball. But no, there's some very, very interesting stories about that old Mets team, like the Steelers team, the old Steelers teams in the NFL. Let's just let's say they had a little extra juice. Let's just put it that way.
We'll put it that way. Speaking of extra juice, you guys are not only sports commentators, but you're also big-time movie stars. We've got an image. An image of you guys in Lady Ballers. There you are. That was the Daily Wire's big comedy, genital-related movie. any thoughts on doing that? That's the natural hair there, right?
A lot of thoughts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, making it was a lot of fun, even though, you know, I never thought I'd get paid to, you know, dunk a basketball on girls dressed up as a girl. But the fact that this is even an issue, like with the men and women sports thing, when there's so many other important things that we should be attacking. I've said this multiple times. One of the reasons the aliens won't talk to us is because we continue to do stupid things like this. And I wouldn't either if it was me.
I think a lot of things just fell right into place for us. Like, we became friends with Riley Gaines, who's been a champion of this movement, you know, keeping men out of women's sports. Don't go stand on the podium and hoist trophies that are designed for women. Two, we always used to joke with Ben Shapiro whenever we'd interview him about getting Blaine to infiltrate the WNBA.
We tried.
And just see, like, how many points. Like, let's legitimately let's play out this ludicrous experiment. And then the third thing is Jeremy Boring wanted to make a comedy movie, a sports comedy. And so he came to us. They trusted us. And I think the concept that they said of, let's make the type of movie that only the Daily Wire can make, the type of movie that Hollywood will not make right now. And it just, everything fell right into place. What an opportunity for
us. Well, we saw Hollywood make it back in the 2000s, where actually comedy movies were actually funny. Go back to Dodgeball, Beer Fest, Wedding Crashers, Old School. All these movies are hilarious. And in my opinion, this was just a layup.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just a hilarious layup subject. And right now, I mean, it's an invasion on women's sports, and there's not enough women and there's not enough men coming to stand up against this. Now, I'll tell you right now, these three guys on the studio in this set every day, no matter what it is, always will fight against this battle. And the movie's not only funny, but it's really good. And that's a great message at the end of it.
Yeah, and I've been saying for like 3 years, I mean, the way the whole woke nonsense in sports ends is there is going to be the most washed up 6'8", 250, you know, small forward, power forward in the NBA who's scoring 3 points a game, and he's 38 years old. He's going to retire, put on a dress, say he's a woman, average a triple-double in WNBA. The feminists will be cheering him on, and then everyone will finally realize how ridiculous the whole freaking thing was all along.
I agree with you 100%. You see all these periphery sports, and no disrespect to track and field and things like that. The minute it gets into women's basketball or women's softball or one of these sports in the forefront, it's going to kill the narrative. That's why they won't let it happen. Volleyball, it almost happened, and they quashed it at the college level. Now, in high school, We all know what happened to that poor girl, you know, recently. But, you know, it's just, it's ludicrous, man. It really is.
Ludicrous is the best word for it. It really wasn't that long ago where Hollywood could make a movie pointing out the ludicrous nature of it. And you have something like, say, a Joanna Man, right? Where the audience is in on the gag, which men dressing up as women has been funny for, you know, all of eternity. But the other characters aren't in on it. It's like the Mrs. Doubtfire, you know, white chicks, that sort of thing. And that was just a traditional comedy. And now in just 2 decades, we've come so far that we can make a movie about the same subject matter, but bring up the trans element to it, and it's completely different, and Hollywood won't touch it at all.
I'm 47 with a torn ACL in the left knee, and one of these days, I'm getting some prosthetic boobs, and I'm gonna play in the WNBA. That's how it's gonna work. All right, so we're gonna hit a bunch of stuff with you guys, kind of related to sports and culture and how these things have collided, and usually, in my opinion, have unfortunately made sports too political. But let's start off with a guy who does kind of what you guys do for a living, Stephen A. Smith, who I find to be an interesting guy, not just because he talked like this, but also because he sometimes get a lot of stuff right and then suddenly goes really wrong with a bunch of stuff. So Joe Biden put out this video where he was eating fried chicken and talking basketball with a family of black people. Take a look.
Oh, man, you got chicken fingers. You got I want the root of making sure I had the hamburger. So tell me about you guys. What you doing these days?
Why don't you share about your passion of sports?
I'm playing AAU basketball right now.
Are you really? Are you guard?
Yes, sir.
Now, what grade are you in?
Seventh grade.
Right now I'm just doing basketball, playing guard on the JV team for my school.
And Stephen A. rightfully called out the hypocrisy if a certain orange man had done such a crazy thing.
Because, ladies and gentlemen, if we're being fair, if we saw Donald Trump sit down in a black household eating fried chicken with a father and a son, what would we say? What would we say? You know folks out there would be calling it racist. Well, if it's racist for him, and I'm not saying it would be, but if it's racist for him, why wouldn't it be racist for Biden?
All right, I'll let you guys hit the political portion. I would just like to say I love basketball and I love fried chicken. I don't know if that makes me racist or whatever, but I just want to put it out there. But do you agree with Stephen A? I mean, if Trump had done this, would this have been racist?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, Trump could save, you know, burning puppies from a car, and if they happen to be black labs, somehow it would still be racist. Yet Joe Biden can sit down and when it comes to Stephen A, there are moments where I agree with what Stephen A says. Now, do I think he kind of talks out of both sides of his mouth, depending on, you know, which way the pendulum swings? Yes, I do. I think he acts different around different people, but every now and then again, he'll hit something I agree with. Mm-hmm. My biggest thing is, you know, at the end of the day, why isn't Joe Biden eating fried chicken? Why are you eating a burger? Like, why is everybody else eating fried chicken? But again, it's just one of those double standards where, you know, if it's impossible to be racist as a Democrat, apparently. This is the same guy, same old white guy who helped sign the crime bill, who did deals with Strom Thurmond, sitting down at a table with a family eating fried chicken and also saying, if you don't vote for me, you're not black. So it's a huge double standard. It's just, at this point, it's laughable, but I think everybody sees it.
You know, the biggest evidence of the double standard is Biden did a thing and Donald Trump's name gets brought up.
Yeah.
Right. Like Stephen A. Smith still brings up Biden's name. Like, that's how you understand. Stephen A. Smith, I feel like if he walked in here right now, I feel like we would all have a great time. We'd have a great conversation. I've seen this man in person at SEC Media Days walk around and take a selfie photo with every single person standing in line. I saw that with my own eyes. Took him about 45 minutes. That's how I feel about him. You know, he'd walk in here, we'd have a great conversation, and then sometimes he goes on ESPN, and I think he just understands very well that his checks are signed by Disney, and he has to say some of these things, and I hate it because I don't think that's how he really feels about a lot of them.
Yeah, I agree. It depends on what network Stephen A. Smith is on, right? You see ESPN, you get to Stephen A. of, you know, seeing the difference between Joel Embiid scoring 7 points and Luka Doncic scoring 7 points, and you haven't seen what he said on those remarks. Mm-hmm. I would like you to go look at that. But then you see him on Hannity.
Yeah,
on
totally Fox different cat.
And oh God, it's everything we agree with. This, and that. Definitely not ESPN. I would definitely not do that. Stephen A. Smith changes who he is depending on the network he's on. But I will say this about the Joe Biden thing. One, you know, I love fried chicken. Two, I've never met any racist chickens. And three, how many times did Joe Biden trip on the way to getting to this house?
Yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't come up all bloody and bruised. I guess he got carried. But this is not surprising. It's Joe Biden. He's more racist than anybody.
The holidays have arrived early with Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale. Upgrading window coverings can be a minor project with a major impact. Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. Browse premium blinds, shades, shutters. We have your patio covered too. And get unlimited window treatments installed for one low cost. Free shipping and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale now. Save up to 45% plus premium doorbusters. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
So I want to throw to another clip of Stephen A, because now let's do Stephen A that, okay, maybe it sort of makes sense. Maybe it was racist, or we can relate it to Trump or something like that. But to make the other point, here he is going after my buddy Clay Travis for talking about DEI in sports and a whole bunch more.
Why did you leave out what provoked DEI? Why did you leave out what provoked affirmative action? To sit up there and call for its eradication across the ball, where race and color and gender and sexual orientation and all of this other stuff doesn't get taken into consideration. Why do you ignore why it existed to begin with? If you acknowledged why it existed to begin with and you said that was then, this is now, I would feel you. Because at least you're taking ownership of the iniquitous acts of the past by your race of people. Not all, not most, but some. And if you take ownership of it, then you're empowering yourself to change it. But if you don't take ownership of it, you can never, ever, ever be inclined or provoked to change.
I just think whether you agree with the guy or not, the way he talks makes you just want to listen, and that's why he's getting the paycheck. But okay, going after Clay for DEI, I mean, we should not have institutionalized racism. That would be the sort of bumper sticker for me on that. But what do you guys think?
Well, I always laugh when people try to fight racism with racism. Like, that's like trying to fight obesity by seeing how many, you know, Snickers you can eat in an hour and a half. It doesn't make sense. My problem with what Stephen A. said is Clay Travis was never a slave owner. Clay Travis, I've never seen Clay actually be racist. I've never been a slave owner, right? I think at some point it's a lack of knowledge historically. Yes, there's been inequities in the past. There's been inequities in the past going from continent to continent, from different colors of people. Any type of inequity, I think, is a bad thing on its face. But at the end of the day, we live in an era now where we don't need to fight racism with racism. The few times where it happens, and it can happen to every race, because racism is not owned by one race. But what Stephen A is saying there is basically like, well, Clay Travis, you're not acknowledging what's happened in the past, so therefore you can't talk about what happens in the future. I haven't done anything to anybody, and if you know history, this isn't a one-trick pony.
Well, Stephen A. Smith better not tune in to what we had to say about the Emmett Smith DEI conversation this week at the University of Florida. You know, Florida stripped those 13 positions for DEI based off the Board of Governors, and that was the right move. And Emmett Smith, the NFL's all-time leading rusher, comes out and says, this decision absolutely disgusts me. And what I had to say about it was, since when does diversity, when is that word synonymous with one particular race of people? And Dave, this is where I have to give you a lot of credit. I mean, you've been a big inspiration for me, just the growth that I've experienced personally and politically over the last few years, because I remember a time when I would describe myself as libertarian or classically liberal, and you had the courage to have people like Larry Elder on your show. And not just have him on your show, but when Larry Elder would come in and bring stats and bring facts, you would listen to him and you changed your opinion. And, you know, kudos to you, because that's why, you know, we started this show and why we're at the Daily Wire and hopefully standing up for these same sorts of things on the sports front.
Oh, well, I appreciate that, and that's he beat the liberal out of me. I think that's what they say. he beat the libtard out of me, something like that. What do you guys?
He did it in such a great way, you know.
No,
those interviews will stand the test of time. People listen to those 20 years from now, man.
You know what? It was, in retrospect, it was absolutely beautiful. And Larry and I eventually obviously became great friends. And I was literally campaigning with him to become governor of California during the Newsom recall, which didn't work out. But like, what a great sort of piece of that story. Let me ask you something, and then I want to connect this to something with Charles Barkley. But generally about the amount of time you guys have to spend talking about social issues or cultural issues or political issues when you want to do a sports show. I mean, that seems to be the thing that has crushed ESPN, and yet everyone is sort of stuck under that doing the biz that you guys are in.
Yeah, well, and it's funny, Dave, because really, if you watch our show, Crane and Company, we don't talk about politics unless there is some intersectionality with sports where we can't avoid it, like men and women's sports. Mm-hmm. To me, that's not even political, just like it's not political for me to put my blinker on in the highway. It's a safety issue. You talk about NIL and college kids getting paid now. That's a political issue, but it's something we have to talk about because it's affecting, you know, the sport. What we want to do is we want to be that old school sports show that has common sense, talk about the culture stuff when we absolutely have to. We don't go reaching for it. We're not trying to get sound bites or race bait or clickbait or any of that. I remember the days of me growing up and watching SportsCenter three times in a row and not hearing a word about politics, just highlights and analysis. And then Baseball Tonight came on after that. That's what we want our show to be, and I think that's why we've had the success we've had, because if there ever is an intersectionality where we have to cover it, we just use common sense, man. It's like I said when I was coaching. I don't care if you're white, black, blue, green, yellow, tall, or short. I want you to either throw strikes, be able to catch the ball, or be able to put the ball in the basket. That's all I care about, and that's what we try and keep it at Crane and Company for as much as possible. And that's why ESPN has hit this iceberg, and them and Billy Zane and everybody's just looking for a lifeboat at this point.
You know, it's funny you mention that, because the thing that kind of made me want to do what I now do for a living is I used to watch SportsCenter like literally 3-4 hours in a row, and it was back in the day with Craig Kilborn and Olbermann, and they were funny as hell.
Olbermann?
And now Olbermann is a complete lunatic because of politics, but they used to make sports funny and talk about it in a new way. But let's talk about Barkley for a minute, because I'm an old school 80s, 90s NBA guy. I've loved Barkley my entire life. I love how politically incorrect he is. I think he gets 90-plus percent of it right, but I think he dropped the ball on something here related to Trump. Surprise, surprise. Take a look.
What did you think? Big sigh.
First of all, I'm just going to say this. If I see a black person walking around with Trump mugs, I'm going to punch him in the face.
Charles.
No, Gail.
You really can't say that because, A, you don't mean that.
I mean that sincerely. I'm going to just tell you something.
And then you will be arrested for assault. And then what?
I'm going to bail myself out and go celebrate.
Don't encourage him. Okay, but go ahead.
Seriously.
Continue.
First of all, if I was at that
conference,
I'd have got up and walked out. That was an insult to all black people.
Mm-hmm. All right. First off, my producer just told me that apparently there's a picture of Mike Tyson wearing a Trump mugshot T-shirt. So we're going to put that up right now. I suspect Charles Barkley is not going to punch Mike Tyson.
No. Look, if you've ever seen Charles Barkley swing a golf club, I don't think he could hit somebody in the face if they stood still with their eyes closed. Yeah. Here's what I'll say. I'm from Auburn, you know, where Charles Barkley played. Mm-hmm. Charles Barkley is a legend. I'm one of those people, and I say the same thing about Taylor Swift, not to put the cart before the horse, but I don't rely on great basketball analysts for incredible political commentary. Just like I don't go ask the baker down the street if he can make me a sword. Or I'm so glad when we weren't developing the A-bomb at the Manhattan Project, they just picked the best singer that we had in the country to go try and develop it. That's not how it works. Charles says some things I laugh at. I think he's really a comedian at the end of the day. Do I think this is a clip that they took out of context that maybe Charles hadn't heard before, that they only played in that context and it upset him? I think that's a possibility. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to be swayed. I'm not going to go up or down based on the political, you know, innuendo or whatever of Charles Barkley. And I saw Wesley Hunt the other day say, listen, I know Charles is 6'6", but he ain't punching me in the face, and I guarantee you he's not. So, look, if what I care about Charles Barkley, I love him during March Madness, the NCAA tournament. Love him on inside the NBA, and him and Ernie and Shaq. I think they do an incredible job.
Yep.
But I just, this is one of those things I just look
at. Yeah, breaking news, you can't take anything serious Charles Barkley says.
No.
Just terrible, man.
It's terrible.
It's terrible.
It's terrible, Dave.
Trump is terrible.
It's funny because he knew as he was saying it, he knew that she was going to run cover for him too, right? Like he was like, yeah, I'll punch him in the face. Come on, let's do this little skit. Let's jump over to some NFL stuff because obviously, you know, we've watched all the leagues go woke to some degree or another. During the Super Bowl, there was an ad that there was a whole bunch of controversy about. Let's show it.
ask me what you know is true. Don't have to tell you. I love your precious heart. I was standing, you were there. Two worlds collided, and they could never tear us apart. We can live.
Jesus didn't teach hate, he washed feet. And there you've got a whole bunch of people washing all sorts of people's feet. A lot of people were not thrilled about this or felt that the messaging was off or at least confused a bit. What's your take, guys?
You know, we talked about this ad the very day after the Super Bowl with Michael Knowles right here in this studio. And Michael said, hey, that ad is not meant for us, right? That ad is not meant for people who are already going to church on a regular basis, who are already comfortable in their spirituality. It's meant to bring new people over. And we said, Michael, I understand that take, certainly. But if you water something down so much to the point where it's really unrecognizable, then what is the point? And that's kind of what we talk a lot about when we talk about professional sports leagues. If you have a sport like football that's so, you know, heavy in its pursuit of globalization or corporatism that it abandons its core demographic, we talked about this with Bud Light as well, then you really are standing for nothing at the end of the day.
I like the idea of what they were trying to do, but I thought the execution was very, very poor. You can call it dilution, you can call it what you want. Let's be honest, outside of who already wasn't a believer in that sense, who did that change, right? How many people did that really bring over? I think it had, you know, no effect. And then the second thing is, look, I'm gonna wash my own feet, but
yeah, I'm not touching anybody's feet.
Yeah, I'm not into that. I don't care what you look like or where you're from.
Them to come over, but I don't want them to come over thinking they're just gonna I'm gonna wash their feet when they get here.
That's not part of the deal.
The message of Jesus loved everyone and Jesus would wash the feet of anyone is such a powerful one. It's, I mean, the main ethos of the New Testament. That message could be delivered in such a better way. Look, let us do it. Let us at Crane, we'll do it for half. Let us make the next Super Bowl commercial. I promise everyone will love it.
Right. That, unfortunately, was couched in sort of the Oppression Olympics version of reality that these people have. Since you mentioned Bud Light, let's just talk about that for just a second. What do you make of sort of the ongoing, I guess it's not as on at the moment, but it seems to me that Bud Light is just done as a brand. I know they're pouring a ton of money into getting people to talk about them and pretend they're drinking again, but I never see anyone with Bud Light anywhere.
Blaine still loves it.
This is a deflection thing for Cone. Cone loves Bud Light, so apparently he was seen on vacation with Dylan Mulvaney a couple months
ago. No, wow, you're going to put that on. Here's what I'll say, Dave. Sometimes I go back to the Jonah Hill on the soccer field super bad rule. People don't forget. Like, I'm a guy, I was a Bud Light drinker before this. That was my go-to beer. And now, number one, every time I look at a Bud Light and I open it, I just see Dylan Mulvaney's face looking back at me. And number two is, I don't know anybody else out there that I'm buddies with that drank it before, that even if nobody's at the bar, you're afraid to ask the bartender for a Bud Light because it's so bad, let alone anybody being around. So they can pour all the money they want into it. They can put all these celebrities in it and try and make it cool. They could have Paul Revere running to hand off a Bud Light to Benjamin Franklin and James Madison. But at the end of the day, Dylan Mulvaney, and it's their fault, has ruined Bud Light. I don't think they can come back. I don't, because it's so ingrained now. I'm not doing it. I wouldn't drink it by myself.
The most important key ingredient is missing, and that's an apology, an acknowledgement of wrongdoing. I mean, you want to talk about getting sales to skyrocket? We could take an iPhone and record the CEO, write down a 30-second script for him, record that on an iPhone for no money, and sales would take off tomorrow. But they don't want to do that because they don't want to lose whatever momentum they had in this, you know, woke globalist push. That
apology means nothing to me now. We're going to wait this long for an apology? Oh, well, now they're sorry.
Well,
all of a
now,
sudden.
Yeah.
What they want to do is sow money at the problem to fix
sure.
it. $100 million to the UFC. They gave up whatever to Peyton Manning. It's a Flex Seal effect, right? You put Peyton Manning's face on it and just slap it right there, and now all of a sudden it's fixed. I haven't seen someone drink a Bud Light since this stuff started
That's
coming.
That's true. Yeah.
What do you guys make of Dana White's deal in that case, as long as we're talking about it? I mean, he took a lot of money. Is it 100 mil? I never heard that number, but he obviously got a ton
That's
of money.
That's what it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look, I thought about it as Bud Light selling out more than Dana White. Like, Dana White's a businessman. Let me put it this way. I would take $100 million from Bud Light if they wanted to sponsor David Cohn, and I would get around it by saying, hey, they believe in the audience that I've built up that I'm going to be able to be a champion. I do think that an apology or an acknowledgement of wrongdoing would go the this way, but if Bud Light is saying, hey, you know what, we messed up so badly that we have to partner with the most masculine sport in the world to be able to salvage our brand, then I thought about it as them selling out more than Dana taking on a new sponsor.
No, I get watching, that.
Is
again,
watching and, a bunch of men just slap each other masculine? Is that what's going on these days?
Well, that's what they tell me.
You know, it's yeah, yes, I guess. It's one of the few gladiator sports I guess we have left. But, I mean, Dave, to be honest with you, and this is where I disagree with Blaine, if you did come out and apologize and take accountability for screwing up, nobody else in power is doing that.
Yep.
How refreshing was it to see Shane Gillis go on SNL, which was basically SNL saying, listen, yeah, we fired you over some woke BS and stuff you had said in the past, but let's bring you back. We were wrong. Let's try and do something funny. I enjoyed that. I can relate to that. But nobody takes accountability in power anymore. And if one person did it, it would be so refreshing. You know, you can use whatever pun, drink, thirst, you know, whatever you want to use, but I actually think it would work.
Switch to tequila, I think, is the moral of the story.
Like, yeah, listen.
Or bourbon.
Yes, Dave, I know you're conservatives. You live in Nashville. You have to drink bourbon, but try some tequila. It doesn't make you an illegal immigrant. I want to jump to something else related to the Super Bowl because Andrew Klavan, one of my buddies, one of your buddies over at the Daily Wire, he had an interesting piece about some of the sort of craziness around something that was happening at the Super Bowl. Let me read a small portion for you. We were right when we said Trump's Russian collusion was a hoax, but they called that a conspiracy theory. We were right when we said COVID came from a Chinese lab, but they called that a conspiracy theory. We were right when we said Hunter's incriminating laptop was real, and they called that a conspiracy theory. Now they're trying to convince us that it's a conspiracy theory that Taylor Swift is a CIA agent trained to create a green screen psyop that looked like a successful music tour so she could then pretend to fall in love with Pfizer plant Travis Kelce while he disguised himself as a tight end for the Kansas City Chiefs, whom the deep state has constructed to win a make-believe Super Bowl choreographed by the same George Soros team that faked the World Trade Center attacks using the very crisis actors who pretended to land on the moon so that Taylor Swift could then endorse Joe Biden for re-election and the Democrat Party could plausibly flood the polls with Android Swifty voters and steal yet another election from Donald Trump. About to have a heart attack. You can fool us once, my friend, but try to fool us a second time and we'll start babbling gibberish and sticking our heads so far up our own asses we'll be able to fart through our ears.
Nice.
You can see how he's
genius.
Written.
Yes.
You can see how he's written 30 books. But what he's referencing there is before the Super Bowl, for like 2 weeks, there was this long lead up with a lot of people on the right politically saying that it was all a psyop, that this Kelce thing with Taylor and all of this stuff was to get votes for Biden. What do you guys make of all that?
Well, first off, Klavan's hilarious. Here's my thing, Dave. I think that there's a few kernels of truth, I believe, in the plethora of what he just said. Now, obviously, you know, Travis Kelce, you know, being a plant, stuff like that, just going to the NFL to do that, I disagree with that. But would you put it past him, Dave? At this point, can you put anything past him? Like, really, would you be shocked if you came out and found out that Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce coming together was a get out to vote push, right? By you know, the left side. I would not be shocked about that at all. I could see it. I hope that's not true. I try to see the best in every situation. But when you look at and it works. You look at the amount of money that the NFL made off this whole Romeo and Juliet situation that's going on with Travis and Taylor. Financially, it worked out. It just, something about it really never felt genuine to me. And you add Travis Kelce now getting paid, what, $20 million to do a Pfizer commercial?
$20 million.
Or $15 or $20 million, something like that, for a Pfizer commercial. You mix that with Taylor Swift. At some point, I think you're going to see Taylor Swift go out for Joe Biden and start campaigning because everything's so bad right now. But I'll go back to what I said about Charles Barkley. If you vote based on what somebody that's good at singing tells you to do, then I'm more worried about you than I am any PSYOP, because you can be – that is one of the dumbest possible things that you could do. So, look, do I think there's some nefariousness behind it? I would not. I'm not putting anything past these people anymore.
Blaine, go ahead. I can feel you itching.
Well, look, I'll go ahead and say this.
Just say it,
Blaine. If Travis Kelce is a plant and you made me to go, you made me go to Cincinnati, I'm pissed.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I'm so pissed, dude. I'm trying to go somewhere in the SEC. But I will say this. Taylor Swift, in my opinion, allegedly, I think she's the leader of the
Illuminati. In my opinion, allegedly.
In my opinion, allegedly.
I think she's the leader of the Illuminati, to be honest, and this is why. Well, first, she brought $315 million to the NFL and half of that almost to the Chiefs organization. Two, I don't think she's going to come out for Biden because I think that hurts her brand more than anything. I mean, she hasn't in, she hadn't gone for a candidate yet. Hell, what, she has so many, 300 million Instagram followers. I mean, she's not, it's almost a Michael Jordan thing, right? I mean, Republicans buy shoes too. I don't know if she'll do that, but I do think this entire thing, I agree with Jake. I don't think her and Travis are a real thing. Mm-hmm. I think this was just a generation pool for the NFL. They just wanted money. And they
worked.
Got it.
And it worked.
And it worked. That's the reason why the Chiefs, who were mediocre the entire regular season, I know they've done this a little bit, all of a sudden get in the playoffs, Taylor Swift shows up, and they're just running, the killing the Ravens, all killing everybody they face. There's a lot deeper than this goes, in my opinion. But Taylor Swift, I'm just glad. I'm so glad it's over.
Well, wait, is it, are you saying? Are you saying
no,
the fix?
No. In it's football not over. Games, in football games, I don't have to see Taylor Swift more than I have to see Andy Reid.
It's not over.
Not yet.
Wait until
we'll
next year.
Not
three-peat.
Yet.
No.
Three-peat.
We're
going to
double
bar,
already triple.
Dave,
problem.
The bar is so low for society now. Okay. Look, she's a singer. She's writing songs in English where you can understand the words. She's female. She's dating a male. Greatest tight end in NFL history. The Super Bowl champs are in a Midwestern flyover state, and everybody loves Andy Reid. Let's just take it as a win and move along until it gets worse. That's what I say.
Fair enough. For the record, I will only vote for whoever Dolly Parton votes for. That's how I make all of my political decisions.
Yeah.
I want to hit one other thing related to Travis's brother, Jason, who just retired from the Philadelphia Eagles. And in his speech, I thought he hit something really nice.
Also given me three beautiful girls and a life that increasingly brings me more fulfillment off the field than it does on. We've had a great run, Kai. I am a product of my upbringing. I think one of the best things a person can be in this world is a father. A father who is present, loving, devoted, just may be the greatest gift a child could ask for in our society. And I have a damn good one. My father believed in me more than anyone.
It continues, but I just thought it was sort of a beautiful way to put a cap on a career because he had a great career, and to credit his dad and then be proud of what he's become as a person, even outside of sports, I thought it was pretty beautiful. We get caught up in all of the political stuff and the cultural fights. What do you guys make of that?
Yeah. Well, a lot of people think he's the best center of his generation. I'm starting to think he's the most likable player in the National Football League. He will be greatly missed. This one hit me hard, and I'm sure you guys too, because I probably wouldn't have played Division I football if it hadn't been for my father. This guy loaded me in the back of a van and took me to 13 different camps over the course of one summer all over the country. He's a reason that I got a college scholarship, and now I have three children of my own, a son and two daughters. I hope I can be half the father that they were, that mine was to me.
Yeah, and look, I think this is a serious problem that we have in society, that parents aren't around, and you know, it's one of the reasons that we're seeing a decay with our young people, and the decisions that they're making is that you don't have that person there to push you, and it's not just to just be proud of you unconditionally, right? It's those tough times. A father and a parent is meant, just like a coach, to be able to push you further than you can push yourself, and I think he had that. He said that for a reason, and I will always say, centers in football, If there was one person I had to have in a foxhole with me and also do my taxes, I'm walking straight into the football building, going to the offensive line room, and getting the center. They're the toughest. They're typically the smartest. And I think you saw the whole person that he was in this whole speech. And it was so genuine, and it was so real. And I thought Travis being in there was great, too. Mm-hmm. I got a brother. You know, we weren't able to play against each other at a high level, but we both went through that same thing and helped push each other even further than we could take ourselves, as I mentioned. So I felt that. That was genuine to me, and he will be very, very greatly missed.
As yeah, and good for Jason to be able to go out on his own terms.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, as long as this guy's career was in the NFL, especially playing offensive line and the center position, as healthy and as many snaps as this guy's played is ridiculous. And no, you really think about it, and you go back to the podcast they started. Jason Kelce is such a likable guy because he's almost like us,
yeah.
Right? Travis, you know, is kind of, you know, the Hollywood version of this family, in my opinion. You go back and you watch those videos. He's dancing at night with the glasses on, the shade. You look up at the DJ table, and Jason Kelce's got a Nacho Libre mask. Dancing with his hair. He's like us. So good for Jason, yeah. Man. Love his wife, love his family. Great career, and in my opinion, Dave, I think he's the best ever played.
Agreed.
Center.
Wow. Yeah.
Let me hit one other thing with you guys, because this weekend right here in Miami, there is a big UFC fight for the bantamweight title. It is Sean O'Malley versus Chito Vera. I was a little confused who is who before we did this. I'm not a huge UFC guy, even though I know contractually as a podcaster, I have to say I love UFC. That's kind of how it works. What do you guys make? You got any predictions for me on this thing? Because I know sports guys love making predictions.
Yeah, I'm a big Sugar Sean O'Malley guy. You know, his one blemish was a loss to Chito in kind of a fluke thing. I'm telling you right now, Chito, he's coming for you. Those hands, they're coming for you. He's healthy. You know, what he's done here recently, everybody keeps saying he's the second coming of Conor McGregor. No, I think he's the first coming of Sean O'Malley. I feel good about Sean. I think he's going to end it early, to be honest with you. Not that Vera isn't talented. I actually love his backstory. He's a big family guy as well, which I have a lot of respect for. But Sean's coming for you, Chito. But this whole card, David,
this is one of the best cards of the year, Dave, for sure. I mean, not just Sean O'Malley, but you got Dustin Poirier's on there, Gilbert Burns going down the list.
Jan's on there.
Peter Jan. That may end up being the best fight on the card, to be honest with you. And right now on the Dustin Poirier one, you can still get him at plus money.
Which is always a good bet,
yeah,
in my opinion. Well, the main card, I mean, you got to go with Sugar Shane. I mean, sure, Sean O'Malley.
He's minus 250.
I mean, right. And you got to think, Vera's only been struggling with who he's been standing up with, struggling with stand-up strikers.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what Sugar is. So I think, I agree with you. This, I don't think this makes it to the second round.
I think it's a revenge TKO tour, man.
Guys, I appreciate your time. Before I let you go, is there some way we can mess around with Michael Knowles? Is there some kind of prank you guys can pull on him, or what can we do?
Dave, listen, you came to the perfect place. Here's what you do. You give us 36 hours. All right, we're gonna get in a room with some bourbon and cigars, Nashville style, and we will come to you. We will reach our people. We'll reach out to your people with a prank that you will love. And Michael eventually will love
something with his Mayflower cigars.
It's got to be something in that realm.
That's what we'll do.
In that realm.
Awesome. Guys, I appreciate it. We're going to link to all your stuff down below. For everybody else, no post-game show. I'm out of town this weekend, and we'll see you on Monday. Thanks. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Be sure to subscribe and rate this podcast. And don't forget, you can watch my direct messages live on Blaze TV and YouTube every weekday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. And of course, if you want to connect with me personally and get early access to my sit-down interviews, join RubenReport.locals.com.